Good morning, everyone. Thanks for coming. We'll kick off now. My name's Anton Capel from AMP. I'm chairing the session this morning. Our speaker is Pete de Jong, sitting here. Pete is Professor of Actuarial Studies at Macquarie University. He's been in this position since 2003. Previously, he's been a reader in actuarial science at the London School of Economics, Professor of Statistics at the University of British Columbia and a number of other universities in Australia, North America and Europe. He is widely published in a variety of quantitative areas, including time series analysis, mathematical statistics, demography, econometrics, risk analysis, mathematical psychology and ecology. He's consulted widely on quantitative projects, including those in the actuarial, finance, statistics and energy sector, and his main interest is in designing quantitative mathematical solutions to practical problems. And one of those practical problems in Australia at the moment, certainly was a feature yesterday, is funding retirement incomes. Pete's proposed a potential solution to that problem. So on that note, I'll hand over to Pete. He is happy to take questions through the talk, so if anyone has a burning question, please stick your hand up, but do come to the microphone, please. Otherwise, questions at the end. Again, at the end, please come up to the microphone to speak.
Well, thank you for coming to this session. It's probably a little bit more technical than others. As you can see, I did this paper with Shauna Ferris. It's an idea that we are trying to sell. It's not a product. It could be a product. It's an idea. And it's addressing or attempting to address what we see lots of in the papers, or especially over the last few weeks, of how to fund retirement income streams. Now, straight away, I'll say, you know, Australia has this system where people, and I think we're all exposed to it, save for retirement, building up some kind of balance. And then what happens? Well, I think I might as well start. A lot of people don't save anything, okay? A number of other people save a small amount, certainly not to fund their retirement. And all these people, of course, go on the old age pension. A third group save moderate amounts. Some groups save a hell of a lot. Okay. Now, the government is, of course, funding a lot of people's retirements, and this is potentially a huge problem for, well, the government, or ultimately taxpayers, and in particular younger people. Although I noticed that there's somebody from my university saying that there's not really an old age problem going to talk tonight, this afternoon. So I'm talking here about managing longevity risk. Now, there are three parties in this. There are, first of all, individuals, and I'm sure that everybody at some stage in their life, especially when you get to my age or younger, a little bit younger, you start to ask, have I got enough for retirement? Will my savings be enough? Governments and taxpayers are other people involved in this issue. The aging population problem, right? They're faced with many people in the future going on to onto the old age system. And this is putting an unaffordable burden on future, or possibly unaffordable burden on future taxpayers. Thirdly, the markets here, you know, and by markets I mean private industry, people like I think most of you are. Is there a longevity market in Australia? There isn't really. You know, there are longevity products. My understanding of them, and I'm not close to it, is that they're not on the whole terribly successful. And the proof of the pudding is the fact that very few people buy retirement income streams that last their lifetime. You know, some people do, but on the whole, they're not very successful. So these three players. Now, SM Bonds. Okay, I'll have to go a bit faster, but let's just look at this picture for a minute. So people save for their retirement, right? So at the end of it, when they get to 65 or thereabouts, some people will have a... Just think of the average guy. Now, I'm not talking about people who save nothing. But some people will have a balance, but they will outlive that balance. Okay? They might have a balance or a super balance that's sufficient to finance 15 years of retirement. And after that, they run out of money. What happens? They become a burden on the taxpayer. Now, the other part of the half of the population, perhaps, they will have a balance and... Let me just work this out. They will also save a certain amount, but they will die early. And guess what happens to their residual balance? It passes through to the kids or whoever their heirs are. So in effect, the current system is the government picks up the tab for those who outlive their savings, while the kids pick up the surplus for those who die early. Now, an ideal insurance system is one where, you know, these guys who die early subsidize the guys who live long. Tontine funds are often set up to sort of cover that thing. So, in other words, those guys who die early, in effect, subsidize the survivors, right? The classic Tontine fund. Now, before I say... I've had a lot of reactions to this paper. One reaction is that what I'm proposing is a Tontine fund. Actually, the reverse is true. I'm proposing what I would almost call an anti-Tontine fund. So how can we avoid this, the government picking up the tab, the kids picking up the surplus? Now, one thing that, you know, of course, everybody could have the opportunity of buying an annuity when they hit 65 with that balance they've accumulated. They don't, okay? A lot of people just spend it and go on the government pension. I don't want to go into all the reasons for it, but it's generally seen as an unattractive thing. Part of it is it's a huge decision that people have to make at one point of time, right? Will I lay out $1 million to buy myself a $40,000 income for the rest of my life? Maybe I'll die in 3 years, right? What about all the medical emergencies, etc.? So I have to skip through this a bit fast. A lot of people don't really understand what a lifetime annuity could be. So what I'm proposing here is what's called an SM bond. Now, initially, I called it a super bond. Super is a bit of an Australian sort of thing. It doesn't appeal to North Americans or whatever. So then I called it an S. And you'll see it has two parts, an S part and an M part. And I thought, okay, an S and M bond. And then I thought, that sounds a bit kinky. So I cut out the and. And now it's called an SM bond, okay? Now, what does this MSM bond achieve? It achieves, and I'll expand on this, so if I haven't convinced you at the end that it does achieve these, you know, please tell me. For individuals, it delivers a government-guaranteed defined benefit pension. A lot of people want that. Right? They don't have to worry about how long. For governments, somewhat contradictorily, there is no longevity risk for them. They're, the stuff they pay out at the end is 100% defined. And it's known 35 or 40 years ahead of time. For markets, remember these are the three players, it delivers a longevity market of which other products could be priced and hedged and stuff like that. So that's the promise. I'll slightly expand on the promise, but that's basically going to be my conclusion. Now, what is an SM bond? Take an ordinary government bond. I just stripped this off the internet. Here's an old bond, right? Just to get the notation right, here's a bond. It happens to be $20 face value. It has an interest rate. It has a certain number of coupons. This particular bond was a 15-year bond. Okay? So it is, a 21-year bond, N. I'll use that notation. It has a coupon of 5.25%. Okay, in the old days, you clipped these coupons. I'm just introducing it for notation. Here's my idealized bond, okay? It is a dollar bond. It is 35 years old, term, okay? So you, if you buy this bond at the start, you get a payment of a dollar 35 years down the road. It's a very long bond. It has a certain number of coupons, C, I call it. And it was issued in 2015, so the payout would be 2050. Just to keep the numbers simple. So we have 35, a coupon, a payout at 2050, and we, everybody knows from the first course they do in financial mathematics, is the price of this bond is going to be the present value of the coupon stream plus the discounted value of the amount at the end. Okay, and it's N years ahead. And if the coupon is about the risk-free... Now, keep in mind, this is a government-guaranteed bond, right? The government knows exactly how much it's going to pay 35 years down the road. If the coupon is about the risk-free rate, then the present value of that bond is about $1. Is that okay? Please interrupt if I... if there's something I say that's not clear. I'm going to call this a 2015 bond. Now, I'm going to add stuff to this bond, but you might as well say, from the government's point of view, it's just this bond, right? Its obligations are absolutely fixed, right? It's actually not going to play any other role in this whole story other than that it guarantees this bond to pay a dollar 30 and all these coupons, and then it's going to get money. So the government would use this bond, or could use this bond, I'll say something about that later, for long-term financing. Now, that's a dangerous thing. But, you know, it could be handled by the future, a future-type fund, etc., right? So when these bonds get sold, the government or whatever, the government authority will get a lot of money. I'm going to add stuff to this bond. Each bond will have an age attached to it. I'm going to use the example of age 40. If you're age 35, there will be a bond for you. If you're age 62, there will be a bond for you as well. But this is an age 40 bond. Only people age 40 can buy this bond. And you'll see the reasoning behind it in a minute. Okay? Bonds will be available for lots of ages. Now, I'm just using an example. The 35 is not fixed in stone. It could be 40 years or whatever. These bonds could be sold at slightly different ages. Notice, if a 30-year-old, what's that hand? If the bond is a 30-year-old bond, then by the time it's redeemed, that 30-year-old will be 65. This 40-year-old bond, and this is the example I'll use, will be redeemed when this person, who's 40 years old, is 75, right? It's a 35-year bond. Any questions? Now, I'm going to just divide this, and this is where the terminology comes in. There's going to be an S part, the left, and an M part, the right. And some other stuff. So I've not really done anything except add age and an S and M. Now, what's this S and M? Okay, suppose Joe Blow buys this bond, right? He's a super saver like you. And I'm proposing that people be required to buy these bonds. You know, everybody gets 10% or thereabouts deducted from their salary. I'm proposing that some of this money be put into these kind of bonds. Joe Blow is called the originator of that bond. He must be 40 years old because this is a 40 bond. If the coupon is about the risk-free rate, Joe must pay about a dollar for that bond, okay? Joe is the originator, and we call this a 2015/40 bond to indicate that it is a bond that can only be bought by those guys who are 40 in the year 2015. Now, in 2016, there will be a whole other sequence of bonds, okay, at all these ages. We'll go into that in a minute. What does Joe do? He gets out the scissors, and I'm just speaking figuratively. He cuts the bond in two, the so-called S and M portions. Notice the S portion is not negotiable. Joe must retain it. The M portion, Joe can hold on to or sell. I would suggest most people should sell. In fact, even they might be sold before they even saw the M part. Okay? Now, what does each of these two portions entitle one to? Let's look at the S portion. The S portion must be retained by the originator, in this case, Joe Blow. And he pays $1 if Joe survives 35 years. The S portion pays nothing if Joe dies before 35 years is out. Okay? It's a survivor bond. He gets exactly $1 if he survives 35 years. No more, no less. He can bet on it. You know, it's government guaranteed. He'll get that dollar. If Joe dies before 35, where does the dollar go to? It goes into an M pool. That it goes into a pool of money of all the guys who die of all the 40-year-old guys who die before the end of 35 years. Okay? So that pool could be big or it could be small. If we're selling a bond, a 30-year-old bond, the pool is likely to be small after 35 years. The M pool, the mortality pool. If we're selling it to 64-year-olds, a lot of 64-year-olds are going to die before 99. So the pool is likely to be very big, the M pool. So Joe can sell this guy M portion at any time. I'll just denote it by like that. It's not crucial, but I'm going to suppose that the M bond holder will get the coupon. This could be rearranged slightly. It doesn't really. So whoever buys the M bond gets the coupon over all the 35 years. But that's not set in stone either. So all the coupons are sitting there. What's the payout on the M bond? The annual coupon, and then a pro rata share of the mortality pool. Remember, it's now no longer, it's an anonymous. It's not tied to Joe Blow, whether he survives or not. The M bondholders simply get a pro rata share of the mortality pool. So everybody who holds an M bond, and it's freely traded in the market, will just, at the end of 35 years, go and say, hey, I've got an M bond, give me my share of the mortality pool. Now, we don't know how many people are going to die, how big that pool is going to be. If Q is the probability of somebody surviving 35 years, then they get, each M bond gets Q, some number between 0 and 1, after 35 years. Now notice something. Q is unknown before 2050, but it certainly becomes more and more known as we approach 2050, right? In 2049, provided all these deaths get notified to the market, it will be almost certain. So people will be able to adjust their positions. Now here is a little bit of mathematics. What is the price of an M bond? You know, markets can price these things pretty well, especially on such a standardized contract. After 2 years for an age X, I use the example of 40, right? But X is now something generic. The M bond holders get a coupon stream of C for the remaining N minus 2 years, plus an uncertain amount Q hat forecast. That has to be discounted back N minus T years at the risk-free rate plus something, because now there's uncertainty in there, right? So they will demand a price for that uncertainty. So this is what the market will pay for such an M bond. Now, who will buy these M bonds? It's a completely standardized contract. There is no default risk. Remember, these dollars are guaranteed by the government. If there is an element of compulsion or encouragement to buy SM bonds, then this will be a very diversified risk pool. If everybody in Australia had to buy or originate SM bonds, then the pools in each one of these cohorts are going to be pretty well diversified. Remember, there's going to be lots of different M pools corresponding to different ages at different points of time. There will be lots of opportunity to arbitrage across these pools, right? Because all these prices must stand in some relation to each other. If you're interested in all the calculations, look at the paper, which I think is up on the website. Oops. Let me just go back. So compare with the current longevity market. In Australia, there's virtually no longevity market. You know, all trades are over the counter or something like that. It's very non-standard contracts, and you never know how much adverse selection is in these pools. Now, okay, I'll just... What does the government get out of this? No uncertainty, right? Its obligations are absolutely fixed 35 years ahead of time. It has no exposure to longevity risk. What do M bond purchasers get? They get some uncertainty because they don't know what Q is going to be, but they can make a pretty good forecast of it. And on top of that, they can trade in the market, so they're not locked in for 35 years. You know, if somebody said to you, you've got to buy BHP stock and you've got to be locked in for 35 years, I think a lot of people are going to have a problem with that. But they will buy 35 years if they can feel they can trade out of it as and when required. What does Joe Blow get? Well, he gets no uncertainty. If he's dead, he doesn't care whether he got paid on the S bond or not. His kids may care. Right? And if he's alive, he's happy. He gets the S-bond payment. Okay? And he knows exactly what he's going to get 35 years ahead of time. Now, this is the only little bit of mathematics I'm doing. What did Joe pay for the whole bond, the whole S&M bond? That was the formula I first put up, right? It's the discounted value of the coupon stream plus the dollar at the end, the discounted value of the dollar at the end. The M bond price has to be that. So if Joe Blow buys or originates an SM bond and sells off the M portion, right, we know what the price will have to be is that. So his net cost is going to come to this. Now, look, you can rewrite this in a number of ways, but basically it comes down to the discounted expected value of surviving 35 years plus a risk charge. Okay, I don't want to get into the mathematics of it all here. But now let's just look at it. And don't look at all stuff on the left. Just look at what's on the right. Here is the cost, the net cost of an S bond at various ages. When you're 30, you'll have to pay a lot because the mortality pay, the pool is going to be small at the end, right? People will not pay you a lot for your M bond. So your net cost of the S bond is going to be high. When you're old, 64, people will say, boy, you know, I'm almost guaranteed to get a full payment on the M bond. Very few people will live to 99. You will get a lot for your M bond, and therefore you will pay little net cost for your S bond. Is it clear, or is it, am I making it clear? Right? So the cost, now I've just done it for different interest rates here, just to show roughly what's going on, but definitely the cost of purchasing, the net cost of an S bond will fall as you get older, right? Because the M bond that you sell off will be much more valuable to potential investors. Now let's look at the other side. So wait a minute, let's see. So young people pay a lot, old people pay little for their S bonds. Little bit unfortunate, because young people are usually not as well off as old people, right? And they have less money to spend on these things. And in fact, they're less concerned about their retirement and all that. But now, what if you just spend $1 each year from age 30 to age 64 on S bonds? What is your, you know, so you just pay $1 up front, and you buy as many S-bonds as that dollar will buy. You'll buy very few S-bonds when you're young, but the number of S-bonds you can buy increases as you get older. Remember, each S-bond gives you a dollar 35 years down the road. So when you first retire, you'll have little money under this system. If you outlive all the others, you'll have lots of money under this system. Now, this is a good thing because a lot of people have little money or a little, I'm sorry, they have some balance when they retire, but not enough to live on if they were to live to 99. So this is sort of covering the tail risk on all those people who are going to live a long time. They don't have any worries. And if they survive a long time, they will have lots of S-bonds to cover all those medical expenses and hip replacements and gosh knows what. Okay, and old age care. Now, some people have said to me, look, you know, like government bonds are not such a good idea. You could base the whole idea on stock market stock market-based bonds. Or corporate bonds with higher risk and stuff like that. The whole idea would carry through. Now, you know, I don't know whether you don't know David Knox. I asked him to have a look at it. And he sells, or his company, I think, he might be the designer of it, the Mercer Lifetime Plus, right? Which is, in essence, if I understand it correctly, is a tontine fund. Right? The survivors get the money that remains as time progresses. Now let's look at compare SM bonds to the Mercer proposal. SM bonds are a partnership between governments, markets, and individuals. This is just a private initiative. Who carries the longevity risk? Well, under the SM bond system, the whole of the longevity risk is borne by the market, by the M bond holders. Governments don't hold any longevity risk. Individuals don't hold any individual risk. They're guaranteed their payments 35 years ahead of time. Under this system, the MLP system, it's the annuitants. If you're lucky enough to survive a long time, you'll get a lot of money. Survival payments, no name priori. Under the SM bond system, yes, you know exactly what you'll get 35 years down the road. Under this system, no, it depends on the pool in which, you know, you're sharing with a lot of people. What are their characteristics, etc. When do you purchase? Now, this is one of the good things about the SM bond system. You are, in effect, buying an annuity throughout your lifetime. Not, you know, so throughout your lifetime, sometimes interest rates are high, sometimes they're low, blah, blah, blah. It's not a once-and-for-all decision that you have to make at 65. If you're unfortunate, like, you know, if interest rates are high, then you will pay little for an annuity. If interest rates are low, you will pay a lot. If you're buying throughout your life, you will be, you know, the purchase decision will be phased throughout your lifetime. The pricing, it's the market that prices the M bonds. So you will be paying what the market is actually demanding. Government savings, of course, because the government carries no longevity risk under this system. Well, also under this system. Guaranteed. Government guaranteed, yes. Easy to implement large scale, very easy. And I'll just have a quick slide on that. Will it kickstart a longevity market? Yes, the M-bond market will be a longevity market of which you can price almost any other contract, right, and hedge that contract on the basis of it. Okay, I did some calculations, but I don't have time to that. Well, some people say, who's going to buy the M-bonds? First of all, at the right price, they will be attractive to anybody. Right. Secondly, maybe some people will want to hold on to their M bonds. They could if they wanted to. It's just another asset class and probably uncorrelated to other asset classes, which will mean that by incorporating M bonds into your portfolio, you will be extending your risk return frontier. Right. So it's an uncorrelated asset class. You know, life insurance companies who need to take a position in the longevity market, they will be, you know, buying and selling it, etc. Arbitrageurs. Now, look, this slide is just about there will be lots of M-bond markets, 2015-40. Remember Joe Blow. But if he survives 1 year, then he'll be also buying 2016-41 bonds. And there must be some relationship between these two prices. They must be very closely connected. You know, all the formulas are in the paper. So arbitrageurs will be able to pick off good deals and sell, you know, take positions in this very extensive markets. Winners and losers. Well, individuals get government-guaranteed defined benefit pensions. Government taxpayers are not exposed to any longevity risk. They know what they're getting. They will get a hell of a lot of funds up front. Well, that could be handled through some kind of future fund. Who are the losers? Well, those who die early, but do they really care, right? Kids, they will care. Well, let's not go into the... I'll just skip that. Look, there's a whole lot of other stuff. Maybe I should wrap up now. So, my conclusions are, or my the bottom line here is, for individuals, they get government-guaranteed defined benefit pensions. Improved security for elderly Australians. For governments, no longevity exposure. Reduced old age pension costs. It's implemented at minimal cost. I didn't go into it, but to tie to super contributions and tax file numbers will be a very simple system to say to people, look, the first 30% of your annual super contributions must be put into S-bonds, right? And they can have the credit right there. For markets, there's going to be a liquid longevity market and a platform for further longevity pricing. Anyway, that's about all I have to say. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Pete. Any questions? If you just please state your name.
I just saw the microphone was at the right setting for me, so I thought I'd ask my first question. Jonathan Sheed, look, intriguing presentation. I think my first reaction is in order for this to work, it has to be compulsory, firstly to get scale and secondly to deal with selection effects. Australians are notorious for not liking being told what they have to do. And so I wonder, you know, this is almost a sale to a government retirement incomes policy, not a sale to a private industry conceptually. You know, what do you think about the political chances of something like this getting up?
Yes, I agree. My position would be government policy is, and government superannuation policy is there to encourage people to save for their retirement in terms of a retirement income stream. Notice I'm not saying save for retirement, but a retirement income stream. That's the key for the government. Now, governments give tax concessions for people's super. If governments are interested in people saving for a retirement income stream, then my argument would be if they're giving the tax concession, it's not unreasonable to say to people, though that tax or those funds for which you're getting a tax concession must be expended on buying an retirement income stream, and this is one way to do that. So I would say I don't like forcing people, or I don't like governments forcing, and I think nobody likes it, but we are forced to pay 10% or thereabouts into super anyway. And all that does is deliver that balance. What I'm saying, let's maybe give tax incentives for people to provide for their own income stream rather than balance at retirement.
Thanks for the presentation, Rachel Pover. Just wondering if you see this complementing or replacing the age pension?
Sorry?
Do you see this complementing or replacing the age pension?
I see it as eventually replacing the old age pension. Now, let me just... Some people will never save. Right, and there's got to be a safety net old age pension. you know, they will not work, or for one reason or another, they will not have their own funds. But I see this, or I'm proposing this, as eventually replacing the old age pension for many people. And the thing is, the whole system can be implemented very easily with tax file numbers. Now, I lived many years in Canada, and they had a sort of vaguely, they had a system whereby people got the Canada pension plan payments based on the number of years they worked. But it was all very black box, and I noticed they're almost bankrupt now, etc., because it was never fully funded. But if you get people to buy these S-bonds throughout their life, and each S-bond is tied to the tax file number, then it's very easy for governments to see 35 years down the road who, you know, who's getting payments from these S-bonds. And I would imagine then if people are getting paid under the S-bond system, they will not be entitled to get payments under the old age pension. Now, just before, you mentioned a thing about adverse selection. You know, this is one thing that bedevils these markets. Yes, I agree that it has to be wide pooling.
I might jump in on that note. If there is wide pooling, does that disadvantage lower socioeconomic groups with lower life expectancy?
Possibly, yeah. And they might eventually would. Yeah, you're quite right. Now, look, there's another whole set of slides here. Remember, I had one bond for each age group. You'd also have to have one bond for males or females because they have different life expectancies. It's also, and maybe you also have to have allow for different socioeconomic groups. But there's so the number of markets starts to increase. But there's a whole section in the paper on how this all can be collapsed down to one market by simply giving people, you know, having one M-bond market and then reimbursing people for their M-bonds based on possibly their socioeconomic group or their whether they're male or female or whether they're 33 or 61 or something like that. And then you had, then you would have one M-bond market for the whole, people to price longevity risk off.
Any other questions? Is there anyone from
Richard Lyon? I had intended to read the paper, and it's still sitting unread on my chair. But the presentation and the concept were fascinating. One of the questions that springs to my mind is just the scale of it all. How much money needs to be sloshing around just so that we can end up with people getting a decent pension out of it?
Well, I did some... Where do I point? I got this question from Anthony Asher at UNSW2 about, and so I went back after I was talking to him about it, and I thought, well, you know, imagine, and I don't know what the right numbers are, but imagine 10 million working Australians, everybody's putting in super money, right? And suppose you had a rule that you could only get a tax incentives or tax breaks if you put the first $3,000 of your super contributions into S bonds, right? Now, from that picture, if you buy $3,000 worth of S bonds, then you'll get an increasing annuity from age 65 onwards. Okay? It's not very much, but the government would get like $20 billion. And these are just my rough ballpark calculations. And it also gets a load of money from the M-bond sales. Now, I'm proposing that when Joe Blow originated SM bond, he doesn't even see the M-bond, right? It gets sold for him in the open market or whatever. So annual SM bond sales would be approaching like $50 billion, just requiring $3,000, the first $3,000 of anyone's super contributions to be used to fund S bonds. So overall, for each year then, you'll get something like 10 million employees get a guaranteed income in 35 years, if then alive. So automatically, the government reduces its exposure with respect to 2050, right? Because all those people are now, not funded very much. They didn't pay a hell of a lot for that. They would probably also have to have, you know, the normal retirement balances, etc. But at least they would be guaranteed a reasonable amount at the start. Up front, the government gets $50 billion of revenue. That's a lot of money for governments to waste. Okay, so maybe better put it in the hands of a future fund, or, you know, use it to build a train from Sydney to Melbourne and infrastructure and stuff like that. Instantly, we'd have a lot of very deep M market. My point is that, you know, you can do some calculations to see what sort of money flows would be required to get people a decent pension or get them off the government pension. I'm not suggesting that this will be a substitute for the government pension from day one. I think over time, it will reduce dependence on the government and will ensure people do, in fact, save for their retirement. Income streams, not balances at 65.
Got about a minute and a half left if anyone has one last question.
Sorry, I'm a bit slow and didn't want to clamber over people. David Rush, the thought occurs to me that one possible disadvantage with this approach would be if you don't survive, if you die, then basically you lose the net cost of the yes bond.
Correct.
As I understand, yeah. Now, you or I might think that's probably reasonable, but I'm just wondering whether the average punter might think that's reasonable, which is possibly one of the big disadvantages currently with the annuity market. So what do you think about that?
I fully agree. You know, that is, the guys who die early are the losers under this system. But to my way of thinking, that's a correct social outcome. You know, the alternative is where the guys who die early, the kids get it. And the government picks up the tab for the guys who live long. So, you know, it is a social compact. And perhaps the inheritance will have to come from all those monies not invested in S bonds, you know, for the super balances. But this is part of, you know, being in the super system, that you have to share that risk and suffer if you're an early death.
Okay, I think we've
One last question?
Thanks a lot for that. I just had one question regarding another way to achieve potentially the same thing, and sorry if the questions seem provocative, but is there a way to just put in place an inheritance tax so that the people who die early actually subsidize the people who die, well, the people who don't die? Does that make sense?
Okay, I think if you're... I think S bonds will be difficult to sell. I think inheritance taxes might be, you know, an even harder sell. But you're right. It sort of would achieve the same thing.
Okay, I think we're going to have to wrap up there. Thanks very much, Pete. Thank you, everyone. And